This episode of Anomaly Supplemental was intended to be our Halloween episode in 2012, but as you're likely aware, Hurricane Sandy hit the east coast of the United States the weekend before Halloween, and at the time I was living on the Jersey Shore. Thankfully, my home sustained no storm damage, but we were without power for 2 weeks. And once the power came back on, the editing of this episode sort of slid down my priorities list. And some other life events and holidays and moving went on that just resulted in my not getting around to editing this until now. Sorry about that.
Anomaly. Something that deviates from what is standard, normal, or expected. An oddity, peculiarity, irregularity, inconsistency, incongruity, a rarity.
I have been a nerd since long before I could have heard that bookish girls should look and act a certain way. And I'll still be a geek when I am utterly antique, because I do not care what normal people say.
Hello and welcome to Anomaly Supplemental. My name is Casey, and there is no Casey, only Zool. And I am an anomaly.
My name is Sue. I was present at an undersea unexplained mass sponge migration, and I am an anomaly.
Guess what we're doing today? So, we are covering the 1984 comedy classic, Ghostbusters.
I love this movie.
It's so good. And it holds up very well. I watched it twice within the past week because I had to get it through the library. And
that's so perfect that you got it through the library. It's happy.
I watched the 1999 DVD and... like, even the special effects, it's still a very good movie. And I think it's the perfect topic for our so-called Halloween episode.
Yeah, I noticed that too when I was rewatching. I mean, I have the, I guess, box set of Ghostbusters 1 and 2. And, you know, there's some buzzing on my DVD, and occasionally the coloration's not that great. But it's an old film transfer. You know, I don't think there is too much that they can do unless they go into heavy restorations on the film. But the special effects that are there, only once or twice was I like, wow, that really looks terrible. But for the most part, I think that it holds up really well. I mean, at least right now, people still have landlines. And that's the only, you know, technology that I'm like, well, that's a little bit behind.
Even then, you can kind of look at some of these films as, if you look at them as period pieces rather than films that are set in a non-specific time that, you know, will live on forever. I mean, I watched Clueless the other day. Holy God, 90s. Like, it was painful to watch, but I had to put myself in the mindset, okay, I have to think about this as a film set in a certain time period. You know, a period piece.
Isn't that weird?
It is. It's so weird. Because it's easier to do when it's black and white film.
Right.
You know, where they have the gorgeous poofy dresses and, you know, men open the doors for women and it's awesome. And they don't curse.
Even the older, like, movie musicals, like Singin' in the Rain.
Mm-hmm.
It's much easier to think of it that way because even people's social mannerisms have changed so much since then.
Yeah.
But in Ghostbusters, I mean, so much of this was on location. Lincoln Center still looks that way. I mean, they've refurbished it a little bit, so it looks somewhat different now, but it still looks that way. Columbus Circle still looks that way. Central Park and even that building, Dana's apartment building, is a real building. And they all, it all still looks the same. I mean, it's nearly 30 years ago, but not much physical has changed in that area. So especially if you're familiar with New York, I mean, it could be today. You would just, I guess, have cell phones instead of walkie-talkies.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of the movie being almost 30 years old, if you haven't seen this yet, it's your fault.
We're spoiling things. I don't care about you anymore. I mean, it took me a couple of years to finally watch Ghostbusters all the way through, but I was at least able to see little parts of it at points in my childhood. I was familiar with the plot of this movie long before I saw it all the way through.
Right. And, I mean, it's become... There are only two movies, but it's become such a part of our social awareness. Like, you remember Hi-C had, like, ectoplasm juice drink that was neon green? And there was the cartoon, and there were the toys. I mean, it was... In the 80s, this was everywhere.
Yeah. And I think they even revived the cartoon several years later, like maybe in the late 90s, early 2000s, but I'm sure we'll get to that. So, brief synopsis. Guys get fired from a university because they're crazy ghost kind of people. They like ghosts and they think they're real, and then they decide to open up an extermination business for ghosts. Boom.
The end.
And there's Sigourney Weaver.
And Rick Moranis.
And Zool.
And Dan Aykroyd and Bill Murray.
And Zool.
Yes, and Zool. Not my first, but one of my favorite experiences seeing this movie. In college, we were right near a movie theater that did Saturday night midnight movies. I think it was once a month. And the very first one I went to my freshman year was Ghostbusters. And it might have even been, like, my first experience at one of these midnight movie crowd things. Like, I had done the Rocky Horror thing. But just a normal movie that, you know, you didn't think would have audience participation. And people are just screaming at the movie. Dana opens the fridge. The entire crowd is going, Zool! It was amazing. Like, I want to do that every day.
I want to go to one of these things.
And just every opportunity I had to hit the midnight movie, I was there.
That would be a fun experience, I'm sure. I think Ghostbusters has a very large geek following. I mean, I think I know more people who are geeky that like this film than I do the more average Joe people who like this film. Does that make sense? I know more average Joe people who like Star Wars than they do Ghostbusters.
Right. So after 30 years, almost, why is it stayed so popular, do you think? I mean, there are still people to this day who are turning their cars into the Ecto-1 and who are making themselves Ghostbusters costumes and dressing up like Ghostbusters for Halloween. Like, what is it about this movie that makes it persist like this? It doesn't, like, have the franchise that Star Wars or Star Trek does.
Well, I think what it is that it's a paranormal urban fantasy for the most part. And it's set in a hotspot city. It also has a very stylized feel to it, and you like the people in it. It's a very small cast, but you like every single character.
It's also incredibly quotable.
Oh, yeah.
Very much like Princess Bride in that respect. Incredibly, incredibly quotable.
And there's just something about it that's timeless, and it helps that there's a nostalgia value, but I think it's also... The director, Ivan Reitman, wanted to go for more of a family film than an adult feature, where there was more cursing and more sexual references. Because the other film that grossed more, you know, around the same time when Ghostbusters came out, was Beverly Hills Cop. And you don't see people cosplaying Eddie Murphy, do you? No, you don't. You see people cosplaying as the Ghostbusters.
Right, because the people who saw this movie as kids are the ones who are now dressed up as Ghostbusters at Dragon Con.
Yeah, and you can show this movie to your kids. And all of the references to more adult themes are just going to fly right over their heads.
Hopefully.
Unless you discussed The Birds and the Bees with your children very early, like... I guess you're supposed to. I don't know. I don't know how parenting works.
Did you say Beverly Hills Cop grossed more? Because one thing I read said that this was the highest grossing movie until, or not movie, but highest grossing comedy until Home Alone.
I think it's more of a long-term thing because when they were in theaters, Beverly Hills Cop earned a lot more money. It was in the number one spot, and Ghostbusters was right behind it. But overall grosses, yeah, Ghostbusters made more.
Another thing I found interesting that it's, you know, it's such a standard thing in movies that they do the scenes with the reporters talking about the events that are going on in the city as things go down. Mm-hmm. And I was rewatching it and I was like, oh, there's Larry King. That's hysterical. And then I was reading about it more today to find out that that was the first time that Larry King was in a film as part of one of those montages. So it was his film debut, was Ghostbusters. And now it seems like there isn't one without him.
Isn't that awesome, though? He's become a staple. You know, I also think this film is still so popular. Hmm. The song.
Yeah, it's true.
Because if you sing it to anybody, it doesn't matter what age they are. It doesn't matter whether or not they've seen the movie. If you go, someone is bound to yell, Ghostbusters! Or if you go, there's something strange in the neighborhood, someone's going to call. Who are you going to call?
Ghostbusters!
And I think what helped is the writer of the song and the singer, Ray Parker Jr., decided to write the song as more of an advertising jingle for the business because he couldn't figure out how to write the theme. But once he saw the TV commercial in the movie, he was just like, I'm going to write a jingle and attack it from that angle. Yeah. And it works. That's the point of the jingle.
It was brilliant.
Yeah.
And stayed at number one for 3 weeks. The other awesome thing about that TV commercial that they made for TV in the movie is that apparently to keep interest going during the run in theaters, they started playing that commercial as an advertisement for the movie with an 800 number instead of the 55 number seen on Dana's TV. And you could call that number and there would be a recorded message from Bill Murray and Dan Aykroyd. Reportedly, according to IMDb, they received over 1,000 calls an hour, 24 hours a day for 6 weeks.
That's awesome.
Isn't that cool?
I wish that number still existed. I would call it.
Right?
Also, I love Bill Murray in this movie, but I also love Bill Murray in every movie. And for the most part, I realize that he's just playing Bill Murray, but right. He plays Bill Murray so well.
He's so good at being him.
That's why people hire Michael Cera or
William Shatner.
Him too. But I was also thinking of David Cross from Mr. Show and Arrested Development. Mm. They just have personalities where they're essentially just playing themselves.
Right.
And they're hired because of it.
Although my favorite character in the movie is Ray. Mostly because he's just so excited about everything.
I know!
Although, growing up watching the cartoons on Saturday mornings, Egon.
Yeah.
But in the movie, Ray. Like, I don't understand why. It's just the way it is.
I agree. And I get a lot of flack ever since our cartoon episode. People are just like, oh, why don't you like Ghostbusters? I like Ghostbusters. I liked the Ghostbusters cartoon. It was the animation that bothered me, but I still watched it, and I loved Egon.
I'm not even sure that your original disparaging comment made it into the release, but we just still keep teasing you about it.
Why? It's so cruel. And I also liked the relationship between Egon and the Secretary Janine in the cartoon. I could always relate to the unrequited thing. I always could. Who can't?
Well, she's just so amazing in the movie, too.
I love Amy Potts. I adore her. I love her. She also played Bo Peep in Toy Story and Toy Story 2.
Completely different type of character.
Yes. I'm just saying. I just like her look, too.
Yeah.
And her voice is just amazing.
Hello, Ghostbusters. Yes, of course they're serious.
But we almost didn't have any Potts as Janine because most of the characters were written for other actors. Mm-hmm. Peter Venkman was supposed to be played by John Belushi. Louis Tully, the Rick Moranis character, was meant to be played by John Candy. Winston was supposed to be played by Eddie Murphy.
Who chose to do Beverly Hills Cop instead?
Gozer was played by Paul Rubens, and Janine was supposed to be played by comedian Sandra Bernhard.
Can you imagine Bill Murray not as Peter Venkman?
No, I can't. Like, John Belushi was a talented comedian, but I can't picture him as Peter Venkman either. It's just Bill Murray. Bill Murray works so well as Peter Venkman.
Mm-hmm. Well, and Rick Moranis is Lewis, too. I mean, Rick Moranis was huge in the late 80s and early 90s. And there was, you know, all the Honey, I Shrunk the Kids stuff and all these tons of other things that he did. But I still think some of my favorite stuff he's done is in Ghostbusters. He was just fantastic.
In Little Shop of Horrors.
Well, yeah.
Last year, podcast. Go listen to it.
But Ghostbusters was before Little Shop.
I'm just saying.
It's true. But that also shows his range, too. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's still kind of like this geeky character who doesn't really have any social skills. But the characters are still so different.
Yeah. He plays Louis Tully more Canadian.
Okay.
Because, well, if you listen to his accent, it's still Canadian, a Canuck accent. And I know that he had a very popular character on SCTV where it was him and another actor and they were just full-blown Canadian. And if Winston had been played by Eddie Murphy, you would have seen the Eddie Murphy character earlier in the film. Yeah. But since he didn't want to do it, they decided to put Winston have him enter halfway through, which I think works better. The exposition works a lot better that way.
And of course, the reason why John Belushi was not around was because he tragically died of a drug overdose.
Right. Dan Aykroyd referred to the Slimer ghost, the green pudgy thing, as the ghost of John Belushi.
Anyway, moving on.
Yes. I'm really glad that the casting worked out the way that it did. And it's a small cast. All of the central characters get plenty of focus time, but there aren't any other intrusions. Like, the antagonist has a very, very minute role.
Yeah. I mean, there's basically the six main characters, and then there are a couple add-ons. Like, Gozer and Peck and Dana's friend when she leaves rehearsal.
Yeah.
Are really the only ones that come to mind. And Uncle Carl, the policeman, when they're in jail.
I know! Isn't that crazy? Uncle Carl from Family Matters! He's so good at being a cop!
That's all he ever does!
I think he was also a cop in Die Hard!
Oh, should we look up his real name?
I guess so.
Reginald Vell Johnson.
Oh, wow. That's fancy.
Or perhaps Uncle Carl.
I like Uncle Carl. I think he'd be fine with that. And the script was written by Harold Ramis and Dan Aykroyd, both of whom were staples in sketch comedies.
Yep.
Dan Aykroyd from Saturday Night Live and Harold Ramis from SCTV.
They weren't necessarily writing together. Dan Aykroyd originally wrote the script and he had set it in the future where Ghostbuster teams were more like firefighters or paramedics where they were just stationed around every city. Mm-hmm. And then they decided that that would be far too expensive to film. And that's when Ramis came in and sort of reworked the script and set it in modern times.
Yeah, I think that worked a lot better.
Yeah.
And it was also, IMDb says it was nominated for a Hugo Award. Because Hugos mean everything.
I love the Hugos because they are fan voted, but they're still a serious award. Mm-hmm. Like, to win a Hugo means something.
Yeah. Anyway. Oh, like this thing that you wrote down. Almost none of the scenes were filmed as scripted, and almost all had one or two ad-libs.
Mm-hmm. That doesn't really surprise me. But yeah. The one that I found interesting in reading more about that was the party scene that Lewis has, where he's, you know, quoting the price of the salmon and interacting with his guests.
Do you have any Excedrin or extra strength Tylenol?
Gee, I think all I got is acetylsalicylic acid generic. See, I can get 600 tablets of that for the same price as 300 of a name brand. That makes good financial sense. Good advice. Hey, this is real smoked salmon from Nova Scotia, Canada. $24.95 a pound. It only cost me $14.12 after tax, though. I'm giving this whole thing as a promotional expense. That's why I invited clients instead of friends. You having a good time, Mark? How you doing? Why don't you have some of the brie? It's at room temperature. You think it's too warm in here for the brie?
Not only is that all a single shot, which is incredibly impressive, it's almost entirely ad-libbed by Rick Moranis. The most impressive single shot that I've ever really come across is Make 'em Laugh in Singin' in the Rain, because that's an incredibly physical number.
Yeah, but it is.
Any time that I see a long scene that's single shot, like, I want to give a round of applause.
I love single shot scenes. I think they work very well. Also, a few of the actors in here have been nominated for Academy Awards in separate projects, which I find very interesting. Because Sigourney Weaver was nominated for Aliens. Dan Aykroyd was nominated for Best Supporting Actor in Driving Miss Daisy. Bill Murray was nominated for Lost in Translation, of course. And I think the only exceptions are Harold Ramis and Rick Moranis. And the guy who played Winston. But that's it.
He's never been nominated?
Mm-mm.
Rick Moranis?
Nope. There's such
a huge
thing.
He's won a handful of Emmys, though, right? He's won 2 Emmys.
Yeah.
You know, sadly, you don't find that many people who do comedy so well getting too many Oscar nominations, because the Oscars, at least in my experience, seem to prefer drama.
Mm-hmm. Which is really pathetic, in my personal opinion. It's just one of those pretentious things where, you know, it has to be highbrow and dramatic and has to make a statement that makes you weep and cry and inspires you. But comedy is harder to write and to perform, which is probably why you see most nominations for comedy in the writing category.
Yeah, and it was only nominated for 2 Oscars, visual effects and music, for Best Original Song. And it won neither. It did win Best Fantasy Film at the Saturn Awards. It had a Golden Globe nomination. It's a silly sentence to say, but I wish that comedy were taken more seriously.
I do too.
You know, and even if you have to get to the point where you split stuff apart,
mm-hmm.
and you have a comedy category and a dramatic category or something.
But also, I want to talk about this. The costumes for the Ghostbusters are awesome, but then you go to the costumes for the ladies, and they're all the sexy costumes.
You're talking about the purchasable costumes at costume stores for Halloween.
Yes.
Yeah.
What's up with that?
This is my issue. Right? And this comes up every year, but I feel like it's getting worse and worse. People are talking about all the sexy costumes they see. And these things have existed for a long time, like nurse and French maid and whatever. But if you just want to buy a women's costume that's Ghostbusters, it's sexy Ghostbusters. Apparently there was a sexy Big Bird costume, and a sexy Elmo costume, and a sexy fruits and vegetables. I mean, the thing is, I'm not saying these should not exist. If you want to dress that way and you want that to be your costume and you want to be a sexy Ghostbuster, go for it. My issue is that that's the only option for a woman. If I can't buy a Halloween costume and have it not be a sexy costume.
Yeah. There's a way to feminize the costume without making it seem impractical.
Mm-hmm.
That's my thing. Because I look at the costume and I think, you know what? Yes, it's sexy. But if I were a Ghostbuster and I were dealing with proton packs,
yeah,
I don't want to run around a haunted mansion in a skimpy dress and my bra.
Yeah.
if you encounter a Slimer, you're just covered in grossness and you just want to be as clean. You want to come out as clean as possible.
I mean, they're coveralls for a reason. They're supposed to cover all, right?
Yes.
Like, you can even bring up Kaylee from Firefly. She's wearing coveralls.
Yeah.
That's fine. There was even, at Dragon Con this year, a Kaylee Ghostbuster mashup marching with the Ghostbusters in the parade.
That's awesome.
I mean, it was fantastic. And there are some people out there who don't like costume mashups. I happen to enjoy them.
Mm-hmm.
But I just, since this is coming out around Halloween, and we're calling this our Halloween podcast, I just, you know, give me a different option than something other than a skin-tight latex mini dress, please.
The reason why I would want to dress up as something is to give off the feeling of the movie, and I feel like the sexy part is very distracting from the TV show or the film or the piece of fruit or the trash bag that you just want to dress up as. Rant done. So I want to go back to our favorite Ghostbusters characters too, because I really like Ray. I have certain archetypes for men in movies, and there are archetypes for females too. Like, you get for the females, you have the ingenue and her quirky best friend and the mean girl and all that. With dudes, you usually find the lovable asshole, the unavailable one, or the geek you want to marry. And I think Ray is that geek that would be a good husband, methinks. And that's why I like him. He would just be a good guy to have around the house. You could picture having a house and a kid with him, a dog, picket fence, barbecue.
Wow. Should I be disturbed about how much you've thought about that?
Dan Aykroyd, no. I'm just talking about personality, because I could say the same thing about Xander. I could say the same thing about Wash from Firefly. Mm-hmm. You know, in some respects, the Bruce Banner half of the Hulk is that guy, you know, you could settle down with. Peter Venkman is more the womanizer that women can't help but fall in love with. And that's why it works so well that Bill Murray is playing him. Also, interesting, now that I think about it, none of the leading males are your traditional leading man types.
Nope.
They're all very quirky and unique looking.
Because, you know what? It's not a love story.
Mm-hmm.
And thank you, comedy, for not being a romantic comedy.
Agreed.
Again, sort of like the sexy Halloween costumes. Not that there's anything wrong with romantic comedies. It's just every now and then, it's nice to watch a movie that does not have to have a romantic subplot. I guess you could argue that Venkman and Dana is a romantic subplot.
But it's a very tiny part of it.
Yeah, and it's more about Venkman continuing to try and get in her pants that mm-hmm. causes him to be there when all of the business goes down instead of them actually having any kind of relationship.
Yeah, I mean, the only other movies I can think of where at least the men aren't your stereotypical leading man types are the Nora Ephron movies, like Sleepless in Seattle. Tom Hanks is very quirky looking. When Harry Met Sally, Billy Crystal, what?
Right.
And Julie and Julia. Stanley Tucci is as Julia Child's husband. None of these are traditional men at all. But it's usually the woman who's supposed to be very sexual. But I would even say Sigourney Weaver is beautiful, but she's quirky. She's a little quirky looking.
Yeah. And she's not sexual until she's possessed by Zool.
I know.
She's just normal. Although, she has a killer apartment.
Yeah, she does.
I just... Maybe it's me, but I don't think a musician in the New York Phil can afford the penthouse on 55 Central Park West with that giant kitchen. But maybe I just am wrong about their pay scale. I don't know.
You see, a part of me thinks that that wouldn't be her full-time job. Like, maybe that's something she does to make money on the side, and that's her passion. Because isn't she, like, restoring paintings in the second one? I don't know how that works.
I don't remember.
I think she's restoring paintings. I don't want to think about the second one.
Okay, we don't have to.
But no, we kind of have to talk about it. Because the second one wasn't received as well as the first Ghostbusters.
Although, in my opinion, the best line of the, I guess, franchise is in Ghostbusters 2.
Being miserable and treating other people like dirt is every New Yorker's God-given right.
That's my opinion.
I don't remember any of Ghostbusters 2, and I think I'm kind of okay with that, because what little I do remember of it, nothing makes sense.
Oh. 5 years after the events of the first film, the Ghostbusters have been plagued by lawsuits and court orders, and their once lucrative business is bankrupt. However, when Dana begins to have ghost problems again, the boys come out of retirement only to be promptly arrested. The Ghostbusters discover that New York is once again headed for supernatural doom, with a river of ectoplasmic slime bubbling beneath the city, and an ancient sorcerer attempting to possess Dana's baby and be born anew. I vaguely remember that. Ghostbusters quell the negative emotions feeding the otherworldly threat and stop the world from being slimed? That's why everyone's miserable, is that their negative emotions are feeding the weird demon thing.
It makes no sense.
Not really. I haven't seen the second one in so long, and even just reading the plot description, I only vaguely remember it, and I feel like maybe the world would have been a better place if there were just the first movie. And then we moved on to the video game and the cartoons.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm wrong. I don't know. If it means that we might get a Ghostbusters 3, then I will support the second movie as much as you want.
Yeah.
If there's a third one, I'll go see it.
I would see it too. But I would also want to know how that would work out. I mean, would they... Well, in the third one, would they have a female Ghostbuster? Because I think that would be pretty cool, but I'm just afraid that she's going to be sexified. I think I heard a rumor somewhere that maybe Eliza Dushku could be one of the Ghostbusters in a possible third movie. I think that would be kind of cool.
That'd be awesome.
She'd kick some ass.
I know that with her, people tend to either love her or hate her. I'm a fan, so... I'm down with that. I mean, I don't think that this creative team that did the first movie would just take any woman and sexualize her beyond normalcy.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, normalcy is not the right word to use there. But their secretary, Janine, I didn't have any problems with.
Yeah.
And Sigourney Weaver, you were just saying, she's not just there to be eye candy.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's the line. You can be sexy and be nerdy and fight ghosts, but if you're just there to be nice to look at, then that's pointless to me.
I think the reason that Ghostbusters worked so well in terms of how they handled Sigourney Weaver's character and also Janine's character was that they had some control over their film. They wouldn't have made a Ghostbusters 2 if production companies hadn't pressured them to do it, but it happened. And then they added the romantic subplot between Lewis and Janine in the second one, and all of a sudden Dana had a baby, and they tried to make the relationship with her and Peter more romantic. And I just don't want them to think that the only way to get a third movie out is if production companies have their claws in it and say, the female character needs to be sexier.
Right.
So I guess the main thing is that my first two exposures to the Ghostbusters franchise was Ghostbusters 2 because they played it on TV all the time. And also the real Ghostbusters cartoon.
Yeah.
That's the thing that kind of weirded me out about it, is that the likenesses in the Ghostbusters cartoon, because they didn't want lawsuits and stuff, they had to change the likenesses of the characters. So Egon had the blonde hair, mm-hmm. and...
with the weird curly Q?
Yes. So yep. Bizarre.
I'm pretty sure that my first experiences with Ghostbusters came from the cartoon. Mm-hmm. I'm not positive, but I'm pretty sure. And then I think when I saw the movies, I was very confused when why Egon did not have weird blonde Elvis hair.
Egon, why don't you love Janine like you're supposed to?
Right? Although I do love in the original movie that those interactions where she's just, he's so clueless and she's into him. It's adorable.
I bet you like to read a lot too.
Print is dead.
Oh, that's very fascinating to me. I read a lot myself. Some people think I'm too intellectual, but I think it's a fabulous way to spend your spare time. I also play racquetball. Do you have any hobbies?
I collect spores, molds, and fungus.
In a way, he kind of reads off as asexual. Like, he's not really interested in women. He's more, you know, interested in what will... this is going to sound dirty. He's more interested in what will stimulate his mind.
That's not that dirty.
Well, I...
You didn't contrast it with a different kind.
And now it's dirty. what are your favorite parts of the movie, by the way?
Oh my goodness. I love me a good musical montage. Mm-hmm. I don't think that's really a surprise to anyone. But I think I love this montage more when they're running around fighting the ghosts around New York City. When I learned that they filmed most of those scenes on their very first day of shooting and mostly without film permits. So they were just running around New York in their Ghostbusters costumes, like with their crazy proton pack guns. And there's one scene in this where there's a security guard chasing after them, and it's not known for sure, but it is highly suspected that this is a real security guard chasing them out of wherever they were.
That's amazing.
Yeah. So it just makes me love it even more. Oh my goodness. I don't think there's a scene in this movie that I don't love, which is a difficult thing to say. But of course there is. I think my absolute favorite might be when Choose and Perish happens from Gozer. And they say, you have chosen. And they're like, Ray, what did you do? And then the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man comes walking around the corner. Because what? I mean, it's just so fantastic.
The choice is made.
Whoa, whoa.
The Traveler has come.
Nobody choose anything. Did you choose anything?
No.
Did you?
My mind is totally blank.
I didn't choose anything.
I couldn't help it. It just popped in there.
What? What just popped in there?
I tried to think.
Look!
No! It can't be.
What is it?
It can't be.
What did you do, Ray? Oh, shit.
It's the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man.
That's my favorite, too.
Evil Stay Puft. It's amazing.
And Ray just has that look
of
sadness and shock on his face. And everybody slowly turns around.
It's just so perfect.
Also, Ray, if someone asks you if you are a god, you say yes.
Yep. I mean, that line has obviously made its way into pop culture, but I'm pretty sure that it was even quoted or at least referenced several times in the Stargate series.
I'm trying to find the other part that I really like, because you know what part it is when they're talking to the mayor about what's going on.
Oh, and he says, "You will have saved the lives of millions of registered voters."
Shortly before that, they're trying to convince him that that terrible things are happening.
These things are real. Since I joined these men, I have seen shit that'll turn you white.
Well, you could believe Mr. Pecker.
My name is Peck.
Or you could accept the fact that this city is headed for a disaster of biblical proportion.
What do you mean, biblical?
What he means is Old Testament, Mr. Mayor. Real wrath of God type stuff.
Exactly.
Fire and brimstone coming down from the skies. Rivers and seas boiling.
40 years of darkness, earthquakes, volcanoes.
The dead rising from the grave.
Human sacrifice, dogs and cats living together. Mass hysteria.
Enough, I get the point.
That's my favorite, because whenever, like, something goes wrong here in the apartment now, I just go, dogs and cats living together, mass hysteria!
It's true.
Also, when Spangler is talking about, comparing what would happen if someone turned off all of their mechanisms and using the Twinkie
as, yes.
as an analysis, and Venkman comes in and Winston says, tell him about the Twinkie. So funny.
Or when they're just looking at the firehouse. And it's just because it's so ridiculous. Ray says, hey, does this pole still work?
So what is your favorite supernatural creature in here? Because I have mine.
You know what's interesting as I was thinking about this? Or at least the ghost aspect of Ghostbusters, is that not everything that they're dealing with, I guess, is a ghost. They're dealing with possessions, which I guess would technically be demons,
mm-hmm.
and apparitions, which would be the ghosts. But then there's one that goes into the cab and turns the cabbie into a zombie.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's interesting that they're Ghostbusters, but they're not necessarily dealing with ghosts. Favorite? I mean, I knew Slimer, really, before any of the others from the cartoon.
Right.
And he's the good, non-violent, friendly, non-Casper ghost.
That's a good one.
What does Barky think?
I don't know what Barky thinks.
You're so sure. What's your favorite?
I really like the Stay Puffed Marshmallow Man.
Yeah.
He's my favorite. Just because he looks like the Pillsbury Doughboy. And then he gets an evil face.
And kind of the Michelin Tire Man at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
Did what you know?
Oh, what?
Going back to my trivia business, making one Stay Puft costume cost $20,000.
Oh my god.
And during production, they made and destroyed three of them.
What?
Yeah. And of course, I think you can kind of tell from once the marshmallow explodes and they're all covered in goo, that the goo is actually shaving cream.
Mm-hmm.
But it does kind of behave like a toasted marshmallow inside goo does.
Mm, so toasted marshmallow.
I know, now you want s'mores, right?
I do.
I totally do.
But apart from the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man, I really like possessed Rick Moranis. Vince Grothel or something like that. If you compare the dogs to the comedy and tragedy masks, he's more the comedy mask where he's more clueless and comedic, whereas Zool is much more serious and sexual. But I love both of them. I love both Sigourney Weaver and Rick Moranis when they're possessed because they act like dogs. Like when Sigourney Weaver is like heavily drugged by Venkman, she has that frantic panting like a dog does when they're dreaming of something that excites them. And I just really like that. This is such a funny movie. And how many comedy meet genre movies are out there?
Most of the ones that come to mind for me are satires of existing genre films.
Mm-hmm.
Like Galaxy Quest and Spaceballs.
Yeah.
Like, they're comedies, but they're based on mostly pre-existing franchises. Mm-hmm. Obviously Star Trek and Star Wars, respectively, in those cases. There aren't that many that are their own original story that are this comedic. They probably have comedy in them,
mm-hmm.
but they aren't meant to be a comedy. You know, I can think Little Shop, which we covered last year.
Mm-hmm. I would say that Simon Pegg and Edgar Wright are kind of inheriting that whole thing, that legacy from Ghostbusters, because they're writing original material inspired by the genres of films that they really like. Shaun of the Dead is a completely original story, and it's set in a very real place with very, you could say that they're kind of stock characters, but they're also very real.
That's an excellent point.
Hot Fuzz too, which makes fun of the action adventure cop buddy comedies. And, you know, they're making a movie called World's End, which is about five friends in their 40s who decide to go on a pub crawl at the end of the world. But, you know, I think most of the original stories that are more comedic, or you could say dark comedy, is horror, like supernatural or horror-based genres rather than sci-fi and fantasy.
I mean, where do you put Ghostbusters along the sci-fi horror line? Because with ghosts and zombie cab drivers and demons, it certainly could be considered a comedy horror instead of comedy sci-fi.
Mm-hmm. What puts it along the more sci-fi lines is the proton packs and the science behind everything, because that's how they catch the ghosts rather than, you know, recite, you know, spells and,
true,
you know, connecting with the dead and putting corpses in their rightful burial spots and stuff. It's all science-based. I mean, come on. I would love to see more comedy sci-fi, though. And even more, it would be hard to do, but comedy fantasy. I mean, the only one I can think of is a really low-budget film called Darkness Rising, which is about a group of D&D players. You get to see the side of their Dungeons & Dragons campaign from their character's perspective. Super funny.
I would call The Princess Bride comedy fantasy.
You know what? Yeah.
I would call Holy Grail comedy fantasy. And maybe even Who Framed Roger Rabbit?
I don't know about Roger Rabbit, because to me, it always seemed more like a mystery rather than a comedy.
Okay.
It always seemed more like a satire, but I can see where you're coming from. That would make sense.
The idea of the two, the cartoon world and the human world being able to interact and live with one another. But maybe that falls more along the mystery urban fantasy lines. I mean, there are so many subgenres that everything basically overlaps anyway. So classify things however you want to. I like what I like.
I do too. But I would love to see more comedies in genre, because especially in the past year, I think while it had serious moments, I think Avengers, when it was funny, it was funny. It was super funny. But then The Dark Knight comes out and you just want to, like, the previews just make me want to take a Prozac.
Right. But the action superhero movies, while they may have some funny lines, that's not their goal, is to be comedic. I understand where you're coming from, where you're saying you want something that is funny, just a funny movie that happens to have a science fiction plot or a fantasy plot. Yeah.
That's all I want. Because I also love comedy. I love laughing. If I could just have more of those genres blended together, I would be a happy camper.
And it's not TV or movie yet, but if you're into books, I would highly recommend Terry Pratchett's Discworld series for comedic fantasy. And it is expected, hoped, planned, that at least one of the sort of sub-series of Discworld will become an HBO series. So maybe we'll get some comedy fantasy on TV.
That would be fantastic.
I'm really, really looking forward to it. And yeah. I hope that it happens very soon.
Yeah. I haven't read any of Terry Pratchett's stuff, but I'm bound to, because we own the only Terry Pratchett book we own right now is Small Gods.
It's a great book.
Yeah. Kevin told me that I would really like it. So as soon as I'm done with the library books that I have now, that might be my next read. I might take a quick break from the library to finally read through Small Gods. Let's see. What else? Oh, we should also play comments.
Oh, we got one from Meds.
Hello, Sue and Casey. This is Meds from Waffle On Podcast and Martian Creative. And this is just my 2 pence worth of thoughts regarding Ghostbusters. I was 11 years old when I saw Ghostbusters, and I was a huge fan. It really hit the spot for me when I was that age, and I still love it to this day. I was a fan of Dan Aykroyd and Bill Murray through watching Saturday Night Live late night shows over here in England. And I really liked the Blues Brothers. I was a huge, and still am, huge Blues Brothers fan. So I was quite familiar with Aykroyd's work. And I'd remember seeing Stripes on TV and quite late at night as well. It's strange how I got to see these films even at that age. I think my dad allowed me to stay up because he gave him an excuse to watch them. Ghostbusters for me was one of those films that made you want to play the part. And me and a friend at school, a junior school, made our own proton packs and told everybody that the block of flats just outside of our school was haunted, and that if you look closely, you could see the swinging body of somebody who'd hung themselves. It was, in fact, a washing line with a jumper on, but to young people's minds, it's amazing what can happen. I love the film, I really do, and I can't wait to hear your thoughts and your observations on it. I know that when Dan Aykroyd wrote the film, he actually did very similar to what he did with the Blues Brothers, in which he submitted almost like a phone directory of the actual plan of it. And that originally John Belushi was going to be in the film. Of course, sadly, Belushi died of a massive drugs overdose, the idiot. But maybe Bill Murray, because I think Bill Murray is the one who replaced him. Who can imagine Bill Murray not being in it? You know, it's ridiculous. Ghostbusters 2 is not very good, really, just purely for the size of the Statue of Liberty, I think. And Ghostbusters 3, which we all want to see, and I don't mean the video game or the console game, whether that will happen, who knows. The effects of this film still stand up today, although they haven't really released a good edition on Blu-ray. The transfer that you've got on Blu-ray is pretty grainy in parts. Sony are a bit crap like that when it comes to their reissues of films. So I'm holding out for a really good version of this film on Blu-ray, because I think there must be some great outtakes and behind-the-scenes stuff and more modern-day interviews with Aykroyd, Ramis, Bill Murray, and, of course, what's his name? The guy one forgets. Eddie Hudson. I can't remember what his name is. Shouldn't be left out, poor bloke. Sigourney Weaver is brilliant in this. She looks beautiful, even as a demon, which says something. And, of course, Rick Moranis. I love that guy. I think he's retired now from acting. I'm sure his wife was only retired for that. But he does some great comedy, roles. And he's brilliant in his film. I still think Little Shop of Horrors is one of his best films. I think it's a great film. Anyway, that's just my thoughts on Ghostbusters. Let's have more Stay Puft Marshmallow and Slimer. And hopefully you'll talk about the cartoon of Real Ghostbusters, which is really weird because the person who does the voice for Venkman in the Real Ghostbusters cartoon is also the person who does the voice of the cartoon version of Garfield. And, of course, in the filmatic version of Garfield, Bill Murray does the voice. A little bit weird. Anyway, can't wait to hear the show. Take care, ladies. Bye-bye.
And as we've spoken of before, the popularity of Ghostbusters and the fans of Ghostbusters have led to numerous internet videos, which we will put a couple in the show notes, two of our favorites being the Improv Everywhere's mission to the New York Public Library to recreate the opening scene of the movie. And the Gangnam Style mashup with the Ghostbusters theme song.
Gangnam Style is, in my personal opinion, I think it's the Macarena of the 2010s. But if you mash it up with one of the most popular songs of all time, it's frightening how well they work together.
It really is. I was in shock. We highly recommend heading to our show notes to check out both of those videos, as we will either embed or link them there. Thanks for listening, and we hope we'll be hearing from you soon. I'm Sue.
And I'm Casey.
And you've been listening to Anomaly Supplemental.
And we're ready to believe you.
All the cool kids keep enthusiasm rationed, right down to the last explosive ounce. But I'd rather indulge my many passions, even if my squaritude's a little too pronounced. Perhaps I do not strike you as a geek.
If you wish to contact the Anomaly Supplemental, you can at the email address, which is moregirlygeeks@gmail.com. That's girlygeeks with a Z at gmail.com. Or if you like hearing the sound of your own voice, like I do, you can call the voicemail line at 248-419-GEEK. Yes, it's one of those numbers that you can use alphabets on, and that's 248-419-4335. To stay up to date with Anomaly and Anomaly Supplemental news, you can follow them on Twitter at Anomaly Podcast. That's the at symbol, A-N-O-M-A-L-Y podcast. Check out the Anomaly blog for geeky articles and Anomaly Supplemental show notes. Find it online at anomalypodcast.com. That's A-N-O-M-A-L-Y-podcast.com. Theme music is used by permission of Marion Call. Thank you, Marion. Find out more at mariancall.com. Or, of course, you can follow her on Twitter at Marion Call. That's MarianCall. Anomaly was created under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivative Work 3.0 Unported License. Say that three times fast.
The audio clips in this episode, from the films Ghostbusters and Ghostbusters 2, were used solely for the purposes of discussion and commentary, and remain the property and copyright of the Columbia TriStar Motion Picture Group and Sony Pictures Entertainment. To purchase these films, visit iTunes, Amazon, or your local retailer.
And I still be a geek after nobody thinks it's chic, because I don't require approval. Gangnam Style. Who you gonna
Gangnam Style. Gangnam Style. Whoop, 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 I'm Gangnam Style. Gangnam Style.